back. Glad you're along tonight. This is going to be a very interesting hour. I know, I think I've gotten 8 or 10, maybe 12 emails on the first post of a YouTube video by Dr. John Cannell, who talked about vitamin D and how it works in the body and is crucial, and how we get such a low amount of vitamin D in our daily lives and our daily food intake. This is a big, big story. I've asked Dr. Cannell if he'd come on tonight. He was gracious enough to do so. He is standing by right now. If you look at his name in guests at rents.com and click on Dr. John Cannell, you'll go to a very important website, the Vitamin D Council. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. But underneath that, I've re-upped the YouTube link to the particular video that he does talk, it's about 6.5 minutes long, about vitamin D in relation to influenza viruses and all the rest of it. Now, let me dump in one or two more little quick things. I've been aware for quite some time that the average American adult probably pulls in about, I think, okay, are we there now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, very good. Okay. Let me just say this about vitamin D. The average American is supposedly taking in about 30 to 50, what are the units per day? Is it IU? Is it micrograms? Is it milligrams, John?
It's, IU.
Okay. If you did see, and I'm not sure how many of you heard what I was talking about a moment ago, but let me just recap that. When I ran the first YouTube version of Dr. Cannell speaking about vitamin D and how important it is, he was able to make a point in 6 minutes that was actually, for me, unforgettable. I got many emails from people asking me about it. Can you get Dr. Cannell on the program? I was able to get in touch with Dr. John Cannell. He's here tonight to talk about this. The average American only consumes about 30. What is the, is it international units? Is it micrograms? Is it milligrams? What is it per day? How do we measure vitamin D, Dr. Cannell?
It's one of the problems, but we measure it in international units. Yeah.
Okay. So the average American pulls in about 30 to 50 IUs a day of vitamin D. At least that's one story I saw. In other words, we're woefully deficient. We need thousands of IU a day of vitamin D to maintain a good functional immune system. But there's much more to this, and you'll see it all if you look under Dr. Cannell's name and guests and click on the data there. It'll take you right to the YouTube video. So if you would, Dr. John Cannell, let's proceed and let's tell the people about vitamin D, one of the most overlooked, I think, components of our diet of all.
It is. The problem is vitamin D is not a vitamin. It was never made to be put in the mouth. The system is a steroid hormone system that has always began in the skin. And in the skin, ultraviolet B radiation makes vitamin D, which then circulates in the body and is metabolized by different organs. But it was misnamed a vitamin when it was discovered back in the 30s.
Hmm.
But it's a steroid hormone system, and that's very important, because as people put on sunblock and read that ultraviolet radiation is worse than arsenic, and they live their lives in a cave.
A steroid hormone system.
Yes.
Very interesting. Let me put that on the back shelf, just on the front shelf, just for a second. Your point about people living in caves, running out in fear of the sun and ultraviolet radiation, is cuckoo. And I've known this for a long time. I can't get out in the sun like I'd like to, but whenever I can, I do. I also happen to believe that properly used indoor tanning is safe and is probably a very good thing for most people to do in limited doses. But that's just me.
I agree with that.
Very good. All right. Please go ahead.
Well, the reason that it's important to understand that this is not a vitamin, it's not a cofactor in an enzymatic reaction, it's not an antioxidant. It's a steroid hormone, and steroid hormones work in a very primitive way. They go to your genetic code, they go to your genes, and they switch genes on and off. And vitamin D has about 1,000 to 2,000 genes that are direct targets of vitamin D. That is, approximately one-tenth of your genome is waiting to be told what to do.
One-tenth?
That's right, one-tenth. There's about 20,000 genes in the human genome.
Incredible.
And about up to 2,000 of them are waiting to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm. By vitamin D.
That's right. They're waiting for the only messenger that can switch them on or off, and that messenger is activated vitamin D.
That's a staggering statement.
Yes. And it's important because people ask, well, what's the mechanism of action? And I say, well, what genes are you talking about? There's 2,000 different mechanisms of action for vitamin D. That's why you read about it in breast cancer, and you read about it in heart disease, and multiple sclerosis, and autism, and influenza, because it's working through different genes in all those diseases.
Do any other of the so-called vitamins, now this, again, we're going to say vitamin D is not a vitamin, do any other of the other vitamins on the normal regimen and list and roster of things we're concerned with have anywhere near this kind of an impact on the body?
No. There's nothing that comes close. Perhaps, if I was going to list the number two and number three and number four, I would have difficulty doing it. Maybe magnesium, maybe omega-3 fatty acids. It's very hard to know. I mean, as these things do not work in by themselves.
Amazing. But,
and the real important thing is that people used to go out in the sun. I mean, when I was growing up, fresh air and sunshine was the mantra. When I was growing up, if I walked into a drugstore, I couldn't find sunblock. I could find coconut oil and moisturizers to increase the amount of the effect of ultraviolet radiation on my skin, but sunblocks didn't exist. Now, if you go into a drugstore, you can't find coconut oil or moisturizers. Everything is a sunblock.
And many of those sunblocks, obviously, as we've talked about for years on this program, contain chemicals that are not exactly healthful.
That's true. In fact, of the five major chemicals that are used in sunblock, three of them are absorbed very rapidly through the skin directly into the systemic circulation. So, it's almost like drinking it. Not that that's dangerous. I don't know that that's dangerous, but it's probably not a good idea.
Are they designed to be transdermal, or is it just the kind of chemicals they are?
It's just the kind of chemicals they are, and when the FDA evaluates something like sunblock, they do not evaluate whether it's absorbed systemically and what the effects are. They evaluate whether or not it blocks ultraviolet radiation.
Wow. So they don't really care if these things are transdermal or not.
I don't know if they care. Bureaucracies, it's easy to say conspiracy, but bureaucracies just work the way bureaucracies do.
That's true. All very well said. Okay, now, there's another thing that people do which is to me nuts. They go outside and they wear the biggest, darkest sunglasses they can, not understanding for a moment that ultraviolet radiation can in fact and does enter your body through the eyes.
That's correct. Yeah, there's a gland that was thought to be the soul for hundreds of years called the pineal gland that is directly stimulated by radiation that enters the eye and strikes the retina. It goes directly to the pineal gland.
Wow. All right. So throw the sunglasses away, folks. Just forget about being cool. You want to be healthy. You want to live long, all right? Let the sun in. It comes in right through your eyes. This is crucial. But more than that, it goes through the skin. How does the sun, we're going to take a break, come right back, Dr. Cannell. How does the sun actually cause the creation of what we call vitamin D in the body? And having been an indoor tanner for a long time, I can tell you that there is no question that many doctors actually send their patients to tanning salons in the winter for what they call SAD, or seasonal adjustment disorder. They get depressed. And that's one of the side effects of being vitamin D deficient, correct?
Yes, so vitamin D is probably one of the mechanisms of seasonal affective disorder, but there's probably a direct effect of light on the retina.
Uh-huh.
And then thirdly, there's a direct effect of ultraviolet radiation on the skin itself.
Oh.
The endorphins that you make when you exercise are also made in the skin on exposure to sunlight. So
very good.
Nature rewards you for sunbathing by giving you a shot of narcotics.
Amazing. All right, stand by. I'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Dr. John Cannell about what they call vitamin D, but it's far more than that. Again, one-tenth of your entire genetic composition can be impacted and is impacted and affected, turned on, as it were, by vitamin D. If I'm not keeping that too simplified, Dr. Cannell, hope so.
Turned on or turned off. It depends upon whether the gene is making too much of that protein or not enough. It varies with diseases.
This could lead to, I could imagine, hundreds of potential problems to one degree or another.
And if you look at the literature, it's very difficult to find a disease that has not been, where vitamin D has not been implicated in one way or another. The whole field of infectious diseases is very rapidly taking notice of the fact that vitamin D upregulates naturally occurring antimicrobial peptides called cathelicidins.
Right.
Cathelicidins are a very potent antimicrobial peptides that work on viruses, bacteria. Any microorganism with a cell wall, a cathelicidin just lyses it very quickly. If you've ever stopped to think about why do people get colds and flu in the winter and very seldom in the summertime? Why are we fearing this pandemic in November and December, but we're pretty sure that it's not going to affect us here in July and August? The reason is because the population's vitamin D levels are about twice in August. They're about twice as high as they are in January.
Okay, all right, that is just amazing. All right, so we need the sun. In lieu of not being able to get out in the sun, and I honestly do counsel people to stay out of the sun in excess. They've got to be careful. Don't put on the sun lotions. Go into the sun in the safe hours. Stay out of it between, 10 till 2 are the worst times. Go out in the morning. Go out in the late afternoon. Get your body actually into that interactive state in the safe time of the day. When we're talking about 100 degrees in the summer, you don't want to be out in the middle of the day. But beyond that, how effective, how good of a substitute is, I take, thanks to you, 5,000 units a day now of D. It's organic or whatever, it's the best I could get. How successful can one be if one cannot get out in the sun by supplementing with D?
Well, very successful, but let me go back and say that the hours that you need to go out in the sun to make vitamin D are actually the hours that you recommend that people avoid the sun. In order to make vitamin D in the skin, your shadow has to be shorter than you are.
Oh.
If your shadow is longer than you are, you can get a suntan, but you will not make any vitamin D.
Really?
Right, so the key is to go out. The key is to go out at solar noon when the sun is as high in the sky as it's going to be and stay out very briefly.
All right, how brief? Right, there's the obvious punchline. How brief is brief?
Yeah, you make about 1,000 units per minute.
Really?
Yes.
5 minutes?
Yes. Full body sun exposure. Yes.
All right, so 5 minutes. We can handle that. That's no problem. You're not going to get burned in 5 minutes.
Right. The average person, it depends upon the amount of melanin that you have in the skin. It depends upon the latitude that you're at.
Sure.
And it depends upon the time of day, and it depends upon how much of your skin is exposed.
That's incredible. So I don't suppose anyone's done the work, but I wonder, for people who work all day and can't do that, if they were to be able to pile into a good tanning bed in the evening for 10, 15, 20 minutes at carefully set, calibrated, and exposed levels of ultraviolet A and B, they probably could do fairly well.
Yes. In fact, you mentioned that the sun in excess is bad, and sun tanning booths in excess is bad. Actually, vitamin D in excess can kill you. Water in excess can kill you. In fact, if you ask a doctor if they've ever seen somebody die from vitamin D intoxication, they'll say no, they've never heard of a case. But if you ask them if they've ever heard of somebody dying from water intoxication, they will tell you yes, because it's not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Paracelsus, the father of toxicology, summed it up best. He said, all things are poison. All things are poison.
Oh,
and nothing is without poison.
Right.
The dose alone determines whether something is poison.
Mm-hmm.
So that's true of everything. And if I use suntan boosts in the wintertime because I feel so much better, but
you bet.
I stay in very briefly.
I do too. Same thing. I've been doing it for over 20 years, and I feel great.
and I use the old-fashioned ones, not the new high-pressure sunbeds. I use the old ones because they make a higher percentage of UVB to UVA.
Up to 6% B is common
right.
for them. They're the
right.
kind that have the long fluorescent tubes in them.
Right. I stay away from the high-pressure modern high-pressure sun. They just say, I don't want a high-pressure sunbed. I want
those are,
the old one.
Yeah, those are 99% A, 1% B. I have to
right.
know about this. And they do tan at a deeper level of the skin, at the lowest level of the skin, causing the melanin to rise for a longer period of time, so the tan tends to last longer if you don't exfoliate so quickly.
Right, but there's quite a bit of evidence now that UVA radiation causes a lot of the skin problems, and
it destroys collagen. Yeah.
Yeah, UVA also destroys the vitamin D in the skin.
Oh.
So when you go out at noon, for example, in New York on the summer solstice, June 21st,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a percent B and the rest is A. And you want to try to replicate that in a sunbed.
What was that percent B again, please?
About what you said, 6% B and the rest
okay.
is
A. Okay. All right, so when you go into a tanning salon, try and get a bed that has 6 or 7% B. Work your way up. You can end up doing up to 20-25 minutes if you have the proper melanin to protect you.
Right.
But, you know, start out with 5 minutes. See how your body handles it.
Right. You made a tremendous amount of vitamin D in the sunbed by lying in there 5 minutes.
Unreal. All right, very good. Stand by. We'll be right back with the amazing Dr. John Cannell in just a couple minutes. Okay, and we're back with Dr. John Cannell, learning all kinds of things, and I again would urge you, in fact I would implore you, to go to guests and click on Dr. John Cannell's name, but below that, where it says vitamin D can prevent flu, click on that, listen to it, 6.5 minutes of YouTube presentation by the doctor, and it could save your life, and the lives of your family, your loved ones, and the works. You folks don't understand, now you're learning, I didn't understand how absolutely essential, how crucial vitamin D is. And it's not a vitamin per se, as we've already learned. But remember, 5 minutes per day, your body will produce 1,000 international units, IUs, of vitamin D, what we call vitamin D, out in the sun at midday. Don't tan outside if your shadow is longer than you are. It's supposed to be shorter than you are. So the worst hours of the day are the best to go out. But we're talking just minutes here. 1,000 units of vitamin D per minute in the sun. Or go to a tanning, a competent, good quality tanning salon. This is really extraordinary information. So John, if you would, let's walk now into the arena of influenza, pandemics, and the rest, and how vitamin D actually can arm the body and help prevent infection from a virus.
Well, the story began at my hospital about 5 years ago when I had my patients all on vitamin D. One ward of the hospital was about 40 patients, and this influenza outbreak came through our hospital, and you know all the wards were quarantined except mine, and my patients didn't get influenza. And I had no idea that it could possibly be associated with influenza, and then I spent about a year learning about influenza and finally I wrote a paper about it that has now been referenced a couple hundred times, and it's focused of, for example, a Canadian government has got a study group now that's going to make a recommendation shortly about whether all Canadians should take vitamin D pandemic preparation.
Right, thanks to you and the YouTube video and the paper you wrote. Our government should be so intelligent.
Yes,
don't hold your breath, folks. That's why we're trying to tell you here and at rents.com to make sure. And it's inexpensive.
You asked me earlier about if you can't get to a suntanning parlor, if you can't get out in the sun, and you're right. The adults need approximately 5,000 units a day.
I'm right.
That will get about 95% of adults up to adequate blood levels.
Wow. All right. And I just bought a bottle. Again, this I think it's called Veg Life. I think that's the label. I don't own stock in the company, folks, but they have 1,000 IU vitamin D in a tablet form, and I think it was $5 for a bottle full of them.
It's a commodity. It's so cheap. It's a commodity.
Yeah. All right. So go on with your story about how your ward didn't get sick and what you found that that vitamin D does to help block this incredible parasitism of viruses.
Right. Well, just shortly after I recognized this on my unit, when I researched the literature, I found that a number of basic science researchers had discovered just in the last several years of this remarkable effect vitamin D has on these antimicrobial peptides. They're geneticists, and they just play around with the genome and put different things in with the genome to see what turns a gene off and or on and makes, you know, when it starts making whatever peptide it's going to be making. And when they put vitamin D in next to this one gene, the cathelicidin production just went through the roof. I mean, it's not a slight change. It's just a huge change in production. And when you just think about it, it makes perfect sense. There's so many infectious diseases that are much worse in the winter. Methicillin-resistant staphylococcus is an example.
Yeah, sure.
Streptococcus, pneumococcus, and influenza is the one we're all fearing now. And I don't want to imply that your chances of getting influenza are zero if you take enough vitamin D. Well, the full effect is not known. What appears to be true is that the proper amount of vitamin D will significantly reduce your chances of contracting influenza, and if you do contract it, will significantly reduce the possibility that you have a severe reaction to it. There was one thing that's very interesting about the 1918 pandemic, which is, of course, what we fear may come back, and that's that many people didn't die of the flu. They died of their own body's immune reaction. There were people, usually young people, who would wake up in the morning coughing, they'd be blue at noon, they'd be black at sunset, and they'd be dead at midnight. And what happened is there was this a dramatic cytokine storm that basically denuded the epithelium off the respiratory tract, and that's what killed them. And that's the second action of vitamin D, is it makes the immune system much smarter and prevents these overreactions by the immune system.
Oh.
So that there's reason to think that it would help prevent the cytokine storms too, which with bird flu, that's what kills people.
Describe cytokines for our listeners briefly, please.
Cytokines are sort of chemical messengers that different arms of the immune system deposit in places where they want to attract macrophages and antibodies and other sorts of the armament of the immune system.
Right.
They're messenger molecules.
Got it. Okay. So when they go berserk,
right,
talk about autoimmune problems.
Right.
Geez.
Yes, right. And every one of the autoimmune diseases that you can list, from the most common, which is type 1 diabetes, to some of the rarest, have now all been implicated one way or another with vitamin D.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I just read a paper today about juvenile systemic lupus erythematosus, which people think, you know, is very rare, but the incidence is exploding. It kills children, and it deforms them. It's just a terrible disease. And in this study, the children with the lowest vitamin D levels had about 3 times more disease activity than the children with the higher levels. It's just tragic.
All right, folks. 5,000 units a day.
And children, 1,000 units for every 25 pounds of body weight.
I was going to ask you next.
Yeah.
What would the child, all right, let's do that slowly. 1,000 units per day. If your child weighs 50 pounds, 2,000 units per day. If your child weighs 100 pounds, 125 pounds, 5,000, okay.
Right.
25 pounds per body weight, 1,000 units per day.
Right.
Now, if a child is an infant, obviously, how would this be best introduced into that child's diet?
Well, you can buy vitamin D in a powder in a capsule, which you can open up. All the health food stores now sell drops, vitamin D drops. Carlson, again, I don't have any interest in them in there financially, but they make a good product called D drops. For example, they have a 400 unit, 1,000 unit, and 2,000 unit drop. Each drop contains either 400, 1,000, or 2,000 units. And a nursing mother, for example, can put the 400 unit drop on her nipple, and it tastes very good, and the baby will just consume it with her breast milk. So.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Smart stuff with Dr. John Cannell. And we'll continue in just a few minutes. You're going to want to pass this program around, folks. VitaminDCouncil.org. VitaminDCouncil.org. Lots of information there. You can get a newsletter, free vitamin D newsletter. How actively involved with these people are you?
I'm the president and founder. We've been at it about 7 years now, about eight years actually.
How is the overall, I'm proud of the Canadian government. I'm not proud of ours for many reasons, but let's hope that the CDC gets on Dr. Cannell's work. And if you folks want to spend a couple of constructive minutes, send the CDC word about this. Send them the URL to the YouTube video. Say, hey, how about some counsel on this? Let's get some advice. Let's get some public discussion. It's all here at the Vitamin Council, vitamindcouncil.org. It's right there. All right, so tell us where we go next with this.
Well, what's happening is there's just an explosion of information. There's the Institute of Medicine's Food and Nutrition Board has been reconvened. The 1997 recommendations are being now reconsidered, and they're going to be increased. No one knows, how much they're going to increase. You know how bureaucracies work, it'll be a significant improvement. But it won't be enough, but it'll be closer than it is now.
What is the current RDA?
There isn't an RDA for vitamin D. An RDA implies that the science is so well known that you can specifically say this is how much is needed. There's only what's called an adequate intake, which is a lower standard of proof. And in 1997, they said, well, we don't know what else vitamin D does. It seems to help rickets and osteomalacia, and this is how much you need to prevent that. But we don't know about these other things. And so they left themselves with the loophole. Now we're learning about these other things. To be safe, what you need to do is have a blood test called a 25-hydroxy vitamin D. The problem is that up to 30% of doctors will order the wrong blood test. They order a 1-25-hydroxy vitamin D instead of a 25. And the 125 will tell you nothing about your vitamin D status. In fact, the 125 is often elevated in vitamin D deficiency. So the key is to have a 25-hydroxy vitamin D and get your level above 50 nanograms per milliliter. That's the key. 5,000 units a day will do that for 95% of adults.
Wow, all right. Okay, excellent. Now, in addition to vitamin D, anything that you would call complementary to it that we might want to be doing that will help with efficiency?
Yeah, that's a great question. Vitamin D needs at least four known cofactors to work properly. That is, four cofactors that Americans are often deficient in. It needs about 10 or 15 cofactors, but Americans have plenty of things except for magnesium. Magnesium deficiencies are, it's more likely that a listener, average American, is more likely they're magnesium deficient than not.
Oh, it's an epidemic.
And the best way to get magnesium is simply to eat seeds and nuts. Sunflower seeds, for example, are loaded with magnesium. Sesame seeds, halva, nuts, especially tree nuts, and eat a handful of seeds and nuts a day. That's one way to get the magnesium. The second is zinc, that is also contained in seeds. The third is boron, which is also contained in fruits and vegetables and seeds quite a bit. And the fourth is vitamin K. Mm-hmm. And you can, the body conserves vitamin K. It doesn't run through it like it does vitamin D. It recycles it. So green leafy vegetables, it's important for people who take supplements to understand you just can't take a bunch of pills and then eat garbage. Yeah, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can't do that.
No.
You have to eat some of the foods that the human genome consumed when it was evolving. And those include nuts, seeds, fatty fish, green leafy vegetables. And if you do that, you'll get all the cofactors vitamin D needs.
Interesting about the boron.
Yes.
We're on a well here, and we have actually elevated boron levels, or higher than average. And the only caution that anyone ever has been able to come up with is it's not real good for some fruit-bearing trees. Other than that, it's great.
Hmm.
So I don't know. But as you said, too much of anything is bad. So,
right. All things are poison. Nothing is without poison.
Yeah, there you go. But it is high boron water is not good for fruit-bearing trees. That's what I've heard. So that's my contribution for tonight.
Yeah, I went in the store yesterday and looked at, and there's a bag of Epsom salts, which is magnesium sulfate, which they use to prevent women from going into premature labor. They use it to treat constipation, and the box it said, great for vegetables and fruit. Sprinkle it on your fruit and vegetables. It's a great fertilizer. So it's unusual to find something in the pharmacy that you can use for so many different reasons.
This is, again, magnesium sulfate?
Yeah, Epsom salts.
Epsom salt.
And the other thing is you can soak your feet in it. Have you ever heard of people getting hot water and soaking the feet in Epsom salt?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out the magnesium is absorbed through the skin, and it may be one of the reasons people feel better when they soak their feet in Epsom salt is the magnesium is absorbed.
Yeah. I have a product that I've sold for 12, 13, 14 years now. It's called Oxy-C. It was invented by a German physician in the 20s, Dr. Eugene Blass. It is magnesium in a peroxide form. It's magnesium peroxide, and it's just done wonders for people.
Yeah. Magnesium, it's amazing how many people are magnesium. In fact, if you look at the 10 most common foods where Americans get their magnesium, coffee, beer, and French fries are among the top three, in that top 10. Magnesium is widely distributed in foods, but there's very little in those foods unless it's green leafy vegetables or seeds and nuts.
Gardens, ladies and gentlemen, gardens.
There you go.
Please. We've talked for years about gardens, and a lot of people did a garden this year. They're harvesting it right now.
Right.
And it's crucial. All right, now, go ahead.
Get some Epsom salts from the pharmacy and sprinkle some on your tomatoes and your green beans.
Interesting. Very good. All right, so what's next for you? Where is this going now? It's taking off, obviously, big time.
Well, the second set of papers that I've written is about autism. I'm convinced, actually, the epidemic of autism, the environmental trigger for autism is gestational vitamin D deficiency, which, 95% of women are vitamin D deficient during pregnancy. And
every time I see a pregnant woman, doctor, I almost cringe.
Yeah.
And if you see one in a supermarket, for my God, looking at what they're buying, you just feel a pain.
I know, and you see these children. I don't know if you know children with autism, but it's more stressful to have a child with autism than it is to have a child with a fatal disease. Because you don't know what's going to happen to the child. You don't know if that child will ever be able to support themselves. What's going to happen to your child when you die? There's a new study coming out of the CDC that shows that the incidence of autism in boys is about 1 in 90.
I've seen one area in the country where it's 1 in 60-something.
Yeah, it's just phenomenal. And it's grown right along with vitamin D deficiency.
Okay, all right, we just have 2 minutes. Is there any suggestion that vitamin D therapeutically supplemented for autistic children can do anything to help them?
Yes, I have a paper on it. Just Google autism and vitamin D, and you'll come to either the paper I published or you'll come to our website. All children with autism should take double what I recommended before, and that's children with autism should take 2,000 units per every 25 pounds of body weight. There are no randomized controlled trials, or there are about seven going on right now. But really the question is, should autistic children be vitamin D deficient? And the answer is no, they shouldn't. And because of the possibility of a treatment effect and the theoretical likelihood of a treatment effect, one should make sure that children with autism have levels in the high normal range, which is 70, 80, 90 nanograms per milliliter.
Mm-hmm.
And they have enough magnesium and the things we've talked about.
Right. Have you seen directly or anecdotally autism improved with...
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. It's right. Just remarkable in some cases. The younger the child, the more likely there'll be a treatment effect, and it depends upon whether or not the autistic lesion was caused from either severe gestational vitamin D deficiency, in which case it's not fully reversible. But there are some children who, as you know, seem to develop autism around the age of weaning.
Right.
That's why parents think it's immunizations, but the fact is that the children are being bottle fed until about 15 months, and then they go on juice. That means they have a zero source of vitamin D.
Got it.
And that's when they develop the autism. The parents think it's immunizations, but in fact it's because their brain is being insulted by not having enough of this neurosteroid.
I am frankly stupefied that the human body can take as much abuse as it does and it continues to function.
Yes, that's a good point. Why aren't we all dead?
it's damn near a miracle. This
yes,
is an incredible machine which puts up with abuse unknown by its owner or its occupant and still keeps on ticking.
Yes.
But we have now, thanks to you, Dr. John Cannell, another major door open to us. And I thank you very much for coming on the program tonight. I honor your work, and I'll continue to be here to help you in any way I can. So please keep me advised.
Sure. If you want me to come on again in a couple of months, give me a call.
I will, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks
Good
so
night.
Much. Good night. Dr. John Cannell. And there's an hour that quite literally is unforgettable. At least for me. So, and I've been onto this vitamin D thing for a little while now since I first saw the YouTube with Dr. Cannell. I got right on it, and I feel a hell of a lot better. I'm taking 5,000 units a day, and it's very inexpensive. I also hit the tanning salon once in a while, but you heard our discussion on that as well, too. Don't buy into this stuff about how dangerous tanning salons are by FDA and CDC and all the other organizations. Done properly, it's fine. All right, back in just a few minutes.